Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show. I've got a great guest on the show today. But before we get to that, I want to make sure you guys go subscribe to the show. If you're a first-time listener or just happened upon this podcast, make sure you go subscribe to the show, whatever podcast platform you're using, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, anything else available in literally every podcast platform. Go do that, subscribe. You won't miss any shows. Also want to tell you about our partner and sponsor for this show, Axios. Axios Today host Nala Badu and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into trends in shaping our world. Go to subscribe to their podcast and the news that matter most. Drew Hill joining me today from the Daily Memphian. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much, man. Just trying to watch some basketball. I'm holed up in my hotel room in Orlando until Friday, hoping I get some negative COVID test results so that I can watch some basketball this week.
That is awesome. Yeah, we talked about you are in the bubble, or is in the bubble, kind of in the bubble. You're in Orlando. You could possibly be at the game on Friday. Did you go to the game today, or you didn't get cleared yet?
Didn't get to go to the game today because I haven't been cleared yet. So I watched it from my hotel room. The one plus is that it wasn't blacked out in Orlando, so I got to watch it on regular TV, although it was the Heat broadcast, so I didn't get Pete Pranica and Brevin and those guys. But it's interesting. I had to come down here all these days before because they turn the tests around in about a day. But given that they only test on Tuesdays and Fridays for what I'm calling it the bubble plus. Since yeah. I'm not inside the bubble, but I am technically in the bubble. I'm in an NBA hotel, and the NBA is giving me these tests. And then whenever I get, cleared, I'll get to actually watch the games, and the arena is in the bubble. So I will be in the bubble, but I'm in the bubble plus. That's the terminology that I'm going with.
I like it.
No, didn't get to watch the game. Didn't get to watch the game, unfortunately.
So are your tests like everybody else's tests? They're like the stick up your nose into your brain test for the COVID?
No, it's actually just a swab, which is
okay.
Nice. I did take the stick it to your brain test on Wednesday, just because when the Daily Memphian is going to invest the money for me to come down here and get a hotel, and it's $140 per test from the NBA, so it's very expensive to get tested. They needed to know I'm negative before I come down here.
Right.
That doesn't mean I didn't get sick in the airport or whatever on the way down here. So that's obviously the NBA still has to test me. But I took a COVID test in Memphis last week, and I got the results this Sunday that I was negative. And I was in self-quarantine for 7 days before I left to come down here. So unless I got sick in the airport, which I, fingers crossed, hopefully did not,
yeah,
I should be good to go for the week.
It is interesting. I know it probably, like, so most people listen to this podcast, it's like, well, they're not talking about basketball, it doesn't matter. But it is an interesting caveat to that of how they are accomplishing what they're doing, because we see just in MLB in just a week or two of them having games, they already have an outbreak and can't seem to control it, or can't seem to get it under control about what they're going to do. And here we are in the NBA doing several games a day, and they're seemingly doing it without problems at all. But the amount of testing they're doing, the way they're doing things, it seems like from the outside looking in, like they have it all under control. What about from your experience so far, just being in Orlando? I mean, I think I saw you post on Twitter that there were security guards enforcing masks and things like that. But I mean, I know just from talking to my wife about Disney, they are taking it pretty seriously. So I can only imagine what the NBA is doing down there just to kind of enforce things and make sure everybody is doing what they're supposed to do, except for Lou Williams, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's pretty intense how serious they take everything here with the COVID stuff. I actually have a story that's going to come out tomorrow, which is just like, what day are we recording this? Tuesday? I mean, who knows with COVID? It's like, I have no idea what day of the week it is
right,
ever.
Yeah.
But I'll have a story out on just the first person account and everything that I've seen. But I mean, basically, I drove the rental car in here and I just drove to where the arena is. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to drive up to the security and I'm going to say, oh, I got lost. I don't know where I am. Sorry. I'll turn
right
around just to see what the security looked like. And I mean, there's sign after sign after sign that says closed event, restricted area, turn around, like, don't even come near this. And then I drove past the Grizzlies Hotel and I drove past the yacht club where Portland is staying. And I mean, there's signs out there with the big NBA logo on them that says this is under 24-hour video surveillance. And there's cops that sit out there and there's security that's out there. And even in my hotel, in the Bubble Plus, when you first walk in, the first thing that they do is check your temperature. Before you can even check in, they got to make sure that you don't have a fever. So walk in, check your temperature. They give you a wristband. And then, you know, you take the COVID test on Tuesdays and Fridays. Where I am, they take the test every day on the inside of the bubble.
Right.
And then there's security that enforces everything. It's funny, they give you this wristband for restricted so you can go around the hotel. Like, we've got pools and stuff. So they give you the wristband that clears you to do whatever. And it's only media in this hotel, so it's pretty empty.
What hotel are you guys at?
Nobody uses it. What was that?
What hotel are you at?
It's the Waldorf Astoria.
Okay.
I mean, it's super nice, but the rate was really cheap because nobody's in it, right? Like, media's the only business that they're getting, so they didn't charge us the insane rates. It was really cheap, actually. But no, it's funny. They give you the wristbands as if you can, you know, move around in here, and nobody does it because nobody wants to take the risk of getting sick and then wasting all of their time and money to come down here. So yeah, everybody just pretty much is locked in their rooms, and it's a really weird experience, but you know, it's a testament to how serious everybody is taking it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's important the way the NBA is doing it because, you know, I know that we're already, you know, I know people are already having discussions and talks about next season because it's gonna be here before you know it, because this season, obviously, the offseason will be very short. And so next season, we'll have to do something as well. The NBA will have to figure it out. And so the way they're doing it now is clearly working. And so and it is a weird thing because I saw, like, even the, you know, the yacht club is next to another hotel. And they have these big blue fences that mark off the regular guests that are still staying there because it's open for DVC members. And so they had these gigantic blue fences where just kind of separates the peasants from the NBA players. So it's very interesting the way Disney and NBA have done it and collaborated with it, and quite honestly have done a fantastic job at it and has allowed us to watch basketball. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about actual basketball coming up next. Sports are back, guys. I love it. I love it. I love it. I've been waiting for this day since March. And the only thing I've got on my mind is MyBookie. It is a home run slam dunk triple overtime game winning shot all wrap up into one. I love it. You love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to get start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and with the start of Major League Baseball just around the corner, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season's even started. Why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Drew Hill from the Daily Memph, and he is down in the bubble plus, as he has named it, and we're going to stick with that because it sounds great to me. Let's talk a little bit of basketball. Grizzlies have played three scrimmage games. First game looked honestly like they haven't played in 4 months. Then the next two games, the pace looked good. They looked like a much different team. What have you been able to just general takeaways from overall from these three games? We'll get into some more finer points in a minute. What's just your overall takeaway from these three games?
Yeah, I was actually – I feel a lot better after the third scrimmage, watching what they did to the Heat today. I was a little bit concerned after watching the first game because, while they did play better in the second half, and that was something that was pointed out by the team and Taylor Jenkins, if we're going to be fair and honest here, they were playing against the second team for Philadelphia that entire second half. They sat their starters for the whole second half. And I was like, that just was not a very good performance at all. And – you have to ask, is it rust or are they just not as good as the 76ers? Because they played a pretty bad game the first time that they played against Philadelphia this year. And so, I had questions going into the last two games. Against the Rockets, they looked really good for three quarters, sort of fell apart at the end, but in a game that doesn't really matter, I didn't think that there was much to take away from that fourth quarter, even though it didn't go their way. I was pretty encouraged by the first three quarters. And then seeing what I saw today, I don't know if you're going to shoot like that all the time. They obviously had a really good three-point shooting day, but that's really encouraging to see that they are capable of that. And I think that's a big plus, going into these last going in these last few days before you actually restart the season. So my biggest takeaway is probably that. I mean, you hope that the three-point shooting is there. Obviously, that's going to make a really big difference. And it was really nice to see Dylan Brooks get on track. He started 4-for-21 in the first two games, and then he shot 67% today and scored 23 points, which was a game high. So that was really encouraging. And I'm glad that they had at least one game where they looked really good before they go into the seeding games, because I would have been a little bit nervous had they not played well in that last game.
Yeah, it is a much better thing for them to play like they did, not only today, but also I thought they played quite well on Sunday as well. Just the pace of playing, and they play so much better when they're playing fast and have an up tempo. Shooting obviously a big deal. Kyle Anderson, what? First of all, what happened? I don't know what happened. I mean, it's the craziest thing. Kyle Anderson shot another 3-for-4 from three today. What do you make of Kyle Anderson? Is this a real thing? I said on the show, I think maybe a couple of days ago, like I'll believe it when it kind of sticks around for a minute, I guess, because it's historically not been there, but it has been, he's been quite a good shooter the past three games. Whatever we have to react to is what's in front of us. What's your thoughts on Kyle Anderson and the shooting he's been able to do?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. He has been great, and you don't want to take anything away from him, obviously, because you hope that he just continues to be a great three-point shooter the rest of the time in the bubble and afterwards. And maybe it gets overplayed a little bit, but they've talked about how he worked really hard on his shot in the four-month layoff. And then it's all about confidence. But that's what everyone says, right?
Right.
As soon as they start shooting well, it's like, oh, well, I found the confidence. It's like, yeah.
Where's that been the last 4 years?
Yeah, exactly. Where's that been for the last 4 years? Or maybe you're just hot right now, and that's the way that it goes. Still, you don't want to take anything away from Kyle Anderson. Obviously, it's been impressive what he's been able to accomplish. Do I think that he's going to keep up that three-point shooting the rest of the time in the bubble? No, I don't think so. But if he's a hair better than what he was before, and that work in the four-month layoff pays off, I think that you have to be satisfied if you're the Grizzlies. I mean, you don't need him to be a 40% three-point shooter.
Right,
but
right.
If he can be 35, he could be pretty effective. And I think he's a career 30% three-point shooter. So
he just needs to be a threat,
Right. He just needs to be willing to take them, and he's got to make enough to where they have to respect him.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't expect him to be this good of a three-point shooter once this thing gets started and keeps going. Maybe for a couple games because he's on a hot streak right now. But I don't expect him to be like this the rest of the way.
whatever show I was talking about, Kyle Anderson, I said the same thing then. Is like he said his career makes and 3-point makes on Friday at that scrimmage, and his career was 2. So a career makes in a game is 2. So I say like take that for what it's worth in terms of shooting 75% for Kyle Anderson. But you're right, like if he can just be respectable enough to where he can't, the defense just does not have to sit inside. They can, they'd at least have to be on the perimeter or virtually around the perimeter to get some space into the lineup. That's really all you need. That's all you're asking for. Another guy, Jaren Jackson Jr., was 2 for 7 today. How important is Jaren Jackson shooting, 3-point shooting outside the arc for the Grizzlies? I think it is something that has to, he has to be not elite, but he has to be, that would elevate his game to and this team to an entirely different level. If he were able to just, go back to what, I mean, this year he's been shooting quite well. He's one of the best 3-point shooters on the team.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. And I would also throw in Dylan Brooks too with him. I think that honestly, when you have a guy like Jaren who can stretch the floor, especially given what Taylor Jenkins wants to do on offense, it really changes your entire dynamic, especially when you want to have a guy like Kyle Anderson in the game. And like we said, if he's not shooting 40% from 3-point range, which we don't expect him to do the rest of the way, you need guys like Jaren Jackson and Dylan Brooks to make shots. So I think it's extremely important. And that's, a big question mark going into this. I think it's one of the biggest storylines of the Grizzlies going into the bubble is which Jaren Jackson are you going to get? Are you going to get the elite 3-point shooter Jaren Jackson, or are you going to get the Jaren Jackson that's going to foul out early in the game and, you're going to lose the ability to stretch the floor with a guy like that? You need the good Jaren Jackson in more games than not down here, especially against good teams. So, yeah, I think that's a huge storyline, and I think he's really, really important for what they want to do the rest of the way.
Well, I mean, he's your second best player. I mean, it boils down to that right there. If you want to be good and if you want to compete, you have to have your best players be good. You mentioned Dylan Brooks. Is he a starter to you? Where are you at on him? I mean, I saw our boy Anthony Sane argue with a bunch of people on Twitter, because that's always super fun to do, about Dylan Brooks and his this is obviously when he was struggling, not after today's game, but people see that and they just they say, well, Dylan is not a starter, Dylan shouldn't be on the team. Like, is Dylan the guy that should be the starting 2 guard maybe next year or the year after that when they go through some couple of free agencies?
I think that's to be determined, right? We probably need to see what he does in the next couple of years. They just signed him to that 3-year deal. So whenever that is up, I think we'll have a better idea. Right now, obviously, I think he's your best option at shooting guard as a starter, and I think you want to keep his confidence level, because I know De'Anthony Melton has been pretty effective too at that spot, and there's a lot of people that really like De'Anthony Melton. And I have the same frustrations with Dylan that I think people that follow the team have, because Dylan does tend to take some shots where it's you're saying yes. no, and then when he makes it, you're saying yes. And he doesn't always make those shots. So of course he's a frustrating player, but you need a player like that, a guy who's not afraid to shoot it, a personality like that, frankly, on the team you also need. So while I think that people's frustrations with Dylan are probably valid, I also think that he's an important piece, and we're going to find out, over these next 2 or 3 years where his ceiling is, because he has a chance to be a really good player. You see him play games like this, like he played today against Miami. Yeah. You see him score 23 points and shoot 67%. And you say, why can't he do that every game? Because it looks effortless out there. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see on Dylan Brooks. I don't think that's something you can really pick apart right now. I think that they signed him to that 3-year deal for a reason, and they'll probably explore that a little bit further on down the line. But he has the potential. You can see it in games like this, but he's also extremely frustrating.
Oh, I totally agree. Dylan's going to do what Dylan wants to do. Like, that's just that is what it boils down to on the court. And, you know, I think Dylan would be a fantastic sixth man. But like you mentioned, you got to have someone better than Dylan. If you got to push him to the bench, you got to have someone better than Dylan to put him in a spot. And I don't think they have that right now. I think you're absolutely right that he is the best player they have at this moment. And I think they got a fantastic deal. I think you tend to agree that with the Dylan Brooks deal, I think the Grizzlies did a fantastic job getting what they did. I thought he was going to cost them a lot more than he did. And I was surprised they got it locked up when they did as well.
Yeah, no, I think that the years are important too. Like, because I think that that's probably, I mean, the 3 years is critical, right? Because that's the point in time when we're really going to know who Dylan Brooks is. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can see him as a volume shooter now and a guy who's a little bit inconsistent, but, you know, sometimes players like that come around. I look at James Harden. I mean, he was a volume shooter too, and he turned into, you know, one of the best scorers in the league. I'm not saying Dylan Brooks is James Harden, but
you heard it here first, guys.
But there are guys that, you know, that come around after a few years in the league, or a switch flips, and all of a sudden they become extremely effective players. And I think 3 years is plenty of years to give Dylan to prove that he's a player like that. So yeah. 3 years to me, I mean, that's a good deal for the Grizzlies.
I think so too. Let's take another quick break. This will be our last break, and we're going to come back. Let's talk about the end of the rotation when we get back and what the Grizzlies should do on Friday. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Drew Hill from the Daily Memphis on the show today. The Grizzlies, obviously, it looked like to me, like probably to everybody else, that Taylor Jenkins was trying to figure out those last two spots in the end of his rotation. The first three spots with the bench, Brandon Clark, Tyus Jones, De'Anthony Melton, looked like to be pretty solid in terms of what he was wanting to do in the first all three games, really. But then there's the idea of Josh Jackson versus Grayson Allen, Anthony Tolliver versus Gorgui Dieng. Gorgui Dieng only got 4.5 minutes today. Anthony Tolliver, Josh Jackson, and Grayson Allen roughly got the same from 15 to 18 minutes in the game. Where are you? I guess it's really Grayson Allen versus Josh Jackson. Let's start there. Where are you on those two guys? Is there room for both, or is it got to be one or the other?
I'm a little torn. I tend to think that Grayson Allen gives them a little bit more. I know that there are a lot of people who are big time proponents of Josh Jackson, so that there will definitely be pushback there. I think in what you've seen in the scrimmages, at the very least, you've seen that Grayson Allen at least looks healthy at the moment. He had a really good block today against Miami. He shot the ball decently well. He's given you some productive minutes so far down here. And I think that if Taylor Jenkins is really going to go off of what he said, which is he's going to use these scrimmage games to find the 10 best guys, I think that Grayson Allen probably has to be in the mix there based off of what he showed you versus Josh Jackson. Now, Josh was playing really well before the season got paused, so you don't want to, you know, discredit him for that, of course. But from what I've seen in the scrimmages, and I don't know about you, I think I've seen more from Grayson Allen than Josh Jackson.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And if everybody who listens to this show knows, I have been a huge fan of Josh Jackson. How long I'm one of those guys you're talking about that's been, you know, talking about Josh Jackson all year, about how he, you know, you either start him or, you know, get him out of the hustle, all this stuff. And I think Josh Jackson is a competent NBA player. You don't get this far in the league without being a competent NBA player. But to your point, you know, you have to do what's good for you right now. And sometimes that's just the way things work out. And whether Josh Jackson was playing great in the beginning of the early in the year, that's awesome. But was he playing, you know, was he playing because Grayson Allen was hurt? Like, is that the only reason he really got the shot? Probably, you know, because Grayson Allen was playing before him. So, you know, we really boil down to, I think Grayson Allen got the potential to be a very good player. And in these games that we've looked at so far, he has done more, like you mentioned, than Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson, 15 minutes, 0-for-4 today. Didn't really do anything. I was 0 points, a couple fouls, and a couple rebounds. Other than that, not much at all. And so, you know, Grayson Allen, like you mentioned, production. He did actual positive things on the floor when he was there. And most importantly, shot the ball well. And that's, I think, what you really need from Grayson Allen.
I don't think Josh Jackson has scored since we got to Orlando.
He has not. He has not scored a basket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's all you need to know right there. Josh Jackson hasn't scored at all. Grayson Allen scored a little bit. I mean, but it's like, you know, productive minutes from Grayson Allen. That's really what it boils down to. It's like, can you put him out there and people respect him? And so, you know, I think it will probably on Friday, we'll probably see Grayson Allen play more than Josh Jackson, you know, so he'll probably play about the same as far as 18 minutes goes, but those starters and those guys in front of him will play more as well. De'Anthony Melton won't have 17 and Tyus Jones probably won't have 17 either. The other two guys that you want to talk about, Anthony Tolliver, Gorgui Jang. And I don't know if this is like, I don't even know if this is like such a straight up, like, because I think there's just different players. So I don't even know if this is like a straight up Tolliver versus Jang, but there just can only be so many minutes, right?
Yeah, I think that those – exactly. I think you're right about that because obviously they're pretty different players. Tolliver gives you more of an outside threat where, you know, Gorgui's going to give you more of an inside presence. And so, I don't know. I think that there's probably space to utilize both of them, but not very much. You know, they're going to be split among some pretty small minutes if I had to predict, unless – Jaren Jackson is in foul trouble, which tends to happen often.
So, yes, often. You know,
I find a way to split time between the two of them.
Fouled out two games in a row. So,
right. Yeah. And today, pretty early, he fouled out, you know, like at the very beginning of the fourth quarter. So, yeah, if he's in foul trouble, and again, this goes back to talking about good Jaren versus.
Is that, you know, how much Jaren, of a. Hold on. Before we go too far on the Tolliver. Do you think that's that? How much of an issue is that for you? Like the fouls with Jaren? Because I see people talk about it all the time. To me, it's such a hard thing to learn. It's like one of the hardest things I think to learn in the NBA is like to be aware of your, like, you know, playing without, you know, defending without your hands.
Yeah, I think he'll grow out of it eventually. I don't think it's, like you said, it's hard to teach, you know? Yeah. It's hard to, especially when you're a 20-year-old player and it's, all comes so reactionary to you still.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's something that Jaren will eventually grow out of, but it's not something that you can just hire a coach, you know, and say that your job is to make sure that Jaren doesn't foul. Because in a game that moves so quickly, and especially at his position where they like his length and his ability to block shots, so he's going to guard versatile players on the other team, it's so reactionary that he's going to foul. Do I think it's a problem? Yeah. I mean, you want to have Jaren Jackson on the floor. So yes, it's a problem. Do I necessarily blame Jaren Jackson for not finding a way to turn it around? No, I don't. I think it's something he'll eventually grow out of, and it's just reactionary right now.
Yeah. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, you got to have the two best players on the court to be competitive. And that's the name of the game. But going back to Tolliver and Jang, I think I could see those two guys being a situational play for Taylor Jenkins in terms of what he goes to off the bench at the end of the game, if Jaren's in foul trouble or if they need some more space, whatever that might be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think so too. They're totally different players. I mean, if you need an inside presence and let's say JV and Jaren are in foul trouble, then you're going to definitely need a guy like Gorgui on the floor more. But if you need spacing and you're having trouble scoring or getting anything around the basket, you know, it's probably you're going to lean towards putting Anthony Tolliver in because he can stretch the defense a little bit more because he's shot the ball really well for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And he made some threes today too. So he's looked good. And I think that, you know, if we were going to straight up compare them, and again, we've said that it's not really fair. I think I like what Tolliver brings more. It's more of a modern game, whereas, you know, Gorgui Jang is, I guess, what they would call a dinosaur in today's NBA. So I guess if you were going to compare them straight up, I'd probably lean towards Tolliver. But again, probably a situational play there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. If you made me choose, I'd probably choose Tolliver right now as well. But, you know, we're obviously sitting here talking about the 9th and 10th guys off the, you know, or 9 through 12 guys off the bench. So, like, The Grizzlies definitely have a problem, a good problem to have, which is good depth there, especially if you're going into some seeding games and not having Justice Winslow. Obviously, we were all excited to watch him play. But Drew, I appreciate you joining me. If you're not, again, go check out Drew's stuff over at thedailymemphian.com. He's got a story coming out, like I said, in a couple of days, maybe tomorrow, about his time in the bubble and what it's been like going down there. Again, Drew, I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, sounds good. Anytime.
Thanks, man.